Thank you very much. We are here to tell you about the music you love and to introduce you to the men who make that music at Orchestra Hall and those who are responsible for that music. And today we are fortunate in having as our guest Dr. Eric Oberg, president of the Orchestral Association. Dr. Oberg, when we played, the orchestra played in Carnegie Hall recently on our Eastern trip, we found that during that week, the four, might I say, major orchestras of the country were giving concerts in that same hall, the New York Philharmonic, the Boston Symphony, the Philadelphia Symphony, and the Chicago Symphony. And I thought it might be interesting, since you are responsible for the destiny of our orchestra, to have some comparisons between these four orchestras. And could we start off with talking about their comparative age?
Well, yes, that's the only comparison I would like to make, because other comparisons might be odious. But as far as age is concerned, our orchestra really is a country. Now, some people may object to this, saying that the New York Philharmonic Orchestra is older and celebrated its 100th birthday, but the fact is that I remember, as a young man, hearing both the Philharmonic Society of New York, which was conducted then by Joseph Stransky, and the old New York Symphony Orchestra, which was conducted by by Walter Damrosch. And the present New York Philharmonic Orchestra is a consolidation of elements from both of those, which only occurred in 1928.
Which leads to their rather clumsy title, I think, or name, the Philharmonic Symphony Society of New York.
Well, no, I'm not even going to make any remarks about about the name, but as far as antiquity is concerned, to be serious about this matter, Boston's orchestra is the only other orchestra with a continuous history, and an older one than ours. It began in 1881, ours in 1891. You might be interested to know that the Philadelphia Orchestra, which has a great reputation also, is a newer orchestra than ours. It began in 1900.
Now, I think people frequently feel that our orchestras are comparatively young, while European orchestras must be very, very old. Is that so?
Well, it isn't strictly so, no, as far as symphony orchestras per se are concerned. 150 years ago, symphony orchestras, usually in small form, used to exist subsidized by royalty. But when royalty couldn't afford that anymore, the chief indigenous orchestra that cities had were the opera orchestras. And the separate symphony orchestra, which did nothing, or practically nothing, except play a full symphony season, didn't begin in Europe until the middle of the last century in most cities.
Oh, in connection with our own orchestra and the date 1891, we really are mistaken, anyone who's mistaken, who thinks that presto, an orchestra started in a certain day in 1891, because its roots go back still farther, don't they? And the great name of Theodore Thomas is the link.
Well, the great name of Theodore Thomas is certainly the link with the origins of our own orchestra. It is possible to assemble an orchestra. They have just done it in Detroit, but even there they've assembled their present orchestra from elements that played in the orchestra previously, and were simply out during the interim when there was no orchestra there. In Chicago, Theodore Thomas had had his own orchestra named after himself for a good many years. And when he came to Chicago in 1891 to spend the last 13 years of his life, and the really the culmination of his career here, the orchestra was built from people who had been in his previous traveling orchestra.
Would you, wouldn't you say that we could call him a great missionary of symphonic work, symphonic composition, symphonic development in this country?
Oh, very much so. He was a man of exceedingly high musical standards, and one who refused to let his standards down. And in his a career here in America in which he was a pioneer and a developer of great music and high standards. For instance, he was the first man who introduced into this country both the second and the third piano concertos by Beethoven, and the triple concerto, which I believe will be on our programs next year for violin, cello, and piano, was introduced by Theodore Thomas. And last, but certainly not least, the great Ninth Symphony, one of the pinnacles of all art, came to America by way of Theodore Thomas. And then to get into the composers of his own century, which was the Victorian 19th century, he first brought to America the second and the third symphonies by Brahms, and the Haydn Variations, Opus 56A of Brahms, that are played in almost every repertoire, almost every year, by the main orchestras. And then he also brought both of Brahms' most famous overtures, the Tragic and the Academic Overtures, that Brahms wrote one summer when he was allegedly taking a vacation. The Academic Overture he wrote to celebrate his receiving an honorary degree in Breslau, and the antidote to his being so happy about that, perhaps, was his writing the Tragic Overture, to take the antipathetic point of view.
You made a comment once to me about the Thomas's influence that I'd like to have you repeat here.
Well, Thomas did have influence by doing these things that I have just mentioned. I was going to say another 19th century composer whose works he introduced to America was Wagner, Richard Wagner. And the Meistersinger Overture that our orchestra just played rather frequently on its recent Eastern tour, and the Flying Dutchman Overture that Bruno Walter played when he was here this winter, were both performed first in America by Theodore Thomas, and so was that great piece for orchestra alone that Wagner wrote, the Siegfried Idyll. Well, now those were landmarks that Theodore Thomas left behind himself at the time of his death. But he also introduced another future landmark before his death by importing a young viola player to this country to join his orchestra in 1895 from Cologne. And that person that he brought here became his factotum, his assistant, his protege, his main reliance. Perhaps you're beginning to guess who that might be, but that person turned out in 1904-5, at the time of the death of Theodore Thomas, to be Frederick Stock, who was our musical director and our conductor for 37 years after that.
I think that might explain to people who have seen the statement on our program founded by Theodore Thomas in 1891 about the orchestra, why that is put on there, because of the great respect we naturally
Yes, in fact, there's history there that perhaps some people don't know. And that is that before Theodore Thomas came to Chicago, and he came because it was anticipated that we were going to have our Great World's Fair of 1893, that when he first came, the orchestra previously called the Theodore Thomas Orchestra was called the Chicago Orchestra until his death. And when he died in 1904, in honor of Theodore Thomas, the name was changed to the Theodore Thomas Orchestra again. And I remember as a boy, all the times that I went to the orchestra concerts, everybody referred to them as the Thomas concerts. Well, in 1912, because we didn't want any other organization to preempt the name Chicago Symphony Orchestra, which is a rather official-sounding title, we changed over to that name, and that has remained our name ever since. But we still do honor to Theodore Thomas by saying on the very frontispiece of our programs, founded by Theodore Thomas in 1891.
There's another interesting thing in connection with that. I wonder how many people who look at Orchestra Hall in the course of their daily walk on Michigan Boulevard realize that it is not Orchestra Hall. It's Theodore Thomas Orchestra Hall that's carved into the stone on the front of our building. That's the thing that fascinates me.
Well, that was news to me, and I appreciate having that information. I hadn't remembered that myself.
On both the north and the south end of the building, you'll find that carved into
the stone. Well, I think that's as it should be.
Yeah. Now, a few minutes ago, you were talking about the works that Thomas introduced into this to this country, contemporary as well as the classics. And I'd like to ask you to make some comment on this subject, which comes up continuously in symphonic circles, of the so-called classic versus the contemporary music appearing on our program.
Well, you're introducing the word versus there, which would make it seem that there was some antagonism between music written now and music written previously. There isn't any antagonism at all. As a matter of fact, I can tell you some compositions which were contemporary when they got their first American performance by the present Chicago Symphony Orchestra, after it became such, and not just in Thomas's previous career. They include, for instance, the Third and the Fourth Symphonies by Bruckner, and the Enigma Variations by Elgar, first played here when that was contemporary music, so-called. And even such great masterpieces that more people perhaps know about, like Richard Strauss's Heldenleben and Zarathustra. Now, contemporary music is something that is simply written by current composers. And current composers don't exist as geniuses in very large number. They never have, and there's no reason to suppose that the present generation of human beings is going to produce any more geniuses than were produced 100 years ago or 150 years ago. So our duty, therefore, is to examine carefully works by contemporary composers, pick the good ones that are well constructed, have inspiration, and are sincere, play them, give them a hearing, and hope that out of the many such compositions that we do give hearings to, there will be an occasional person whose music will live and will be beloved in future decades.
But is the touchstone, would you say, audience reaction to a new work?
No, I wouldn't say that exactly, although in the long run, over many repetitions, that begins to become such. But at the first hearing of a new work, particularly if it's difficult, audience reaction is sometimes erroneous in both directions. I remember one particular instance by an acknowledged great composer, upon whom I'm certainly not casting aspersions, but his name was Maurice Ravel. And when our orchestra, with Frederick Stock conducting it, gave the first performance of Ravel's Bolero, there was great and tumultuous applause by the audience of this somewhat repetitious piece as far as musicians are concerned. And when the applause had died down, Mr. Stock turned around and held up his hand and said, "I hope you enjoyed it, because this is going to be the last time you hear it from me."
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Oberg, for adding this very interesting program and comment on this series of your symphony scrapbook.